From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a rainy day in Paris in 2008. Two men had attended a conference and they were trying to hail a cab, and they were not having much luck. In the Paris rain, Travis Kalanick and Garrett Camp mused about finding a better way and using modern technology to do it. That was the seed that eventually became Uber, originally known as a ride-sharing service, but more appropriately now called a ride-hailing service. Today, Uber and Lyft are earning billions of dollars worldwide with a simple setup. Use the app on your smartphone, and you'll have a driver pick you up promptly. You can rate the driver and see their ratings. You can see a countdown clock to determine how long it will take for them to arrive. It is supposed to be clean and efficient. Lyft came to Rochester a couple of summers ago, but lawsuits have halted Uber and Lyft in New York State outside New York City. Taxi drivers point out that Uber and Lyft don't operate under the same rules. Drivers are not employees of the companies, but independent contractors. They often get paid less, without benefits. Lyft recently settled a lawsuit with drivers who wanted to achieve employee status. The company refused, but agreed to pay out more than $12 million. So if Uber and Lyft come to Rochester, who benefits? Who might be hurt? Our panel this hour will explore all of that. So let me welcome my guests for the hour. Franny Sobchak is here from Workers United and the Rochester Taxi Drivers Association. Franny, nice to have you.
Thanks for having us here.
Clark Hograff is here, an associate professor of electrical engineering technology at RIT. Clark, welcome.
Good to be here.
Jay Ramachandran's here, the CEO of Brighton Securities, and I sort of cheekily referred to him as an Uber enthusiast, but fair to say you've used Uber on the road.
Yes, I've used Uber on the road plenty of times. Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Zubin Soleimani is on the line with us. Zubin is with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. Zubin, welcome to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Evan.
Well, let me just start with this, Franny. What is the main objection from taxi drivers? And this is not... You know, this is not unique to Rochester. It's not unique to Syracuse.
It's
not unique to Buffalo. But around the country, these battles are happening with taxis, with Uber, with Lyft. On what grounds?
Okay. Our main thing is that we want to make sure that our taxi drivers here in Rochester, Monroe County, and then in New York State are given a fair shake. Okay. These guys here in Rochester, because they're under municipal code Chapter 108, can make a good living. They can make a good living to where they raise families, you know, and they have a good life. If the rideshare was to come in, we feel, in our opinion, the way the rules and regulations stand right now, our guys would lose out in good-paying jobs that have supported them and their families over the years would dissipate.
Okay. What I want to do to hear from some of the supporters of bringing Uber and Lyft in, I want to listen to some comments. First of all, yesterday on this program, I welcomed Janine Wasley, who's the owner of Avino Restaurant in Rochester. And before she left, we chatted about why she says the restaurant and hospitality industry in Rochester is pushing for Uber and Lyft to be allowed in. So here's what Janine told me about who is supporting Uber and Lyft.
Anyone that has a liquor license. I mean, people come out now and they have a nice dinner and they have a glass of wine, maybe two, and they leave. They're scared to drive, and they should be. If you have, you know, better cab services in place, people will come out and maybe have three or four glasses of wine and spend more money in the restaurant, which in turn we can pay our employees more, and there's a lot more we can do.
What's wrong with the current taxi system?
Oh, it's terrible. It really is. You call, they say they're going to be there in 20 minutes, a half an hour later, no one's there. You're calling again, they hang up on you. I'm not going to name any companies, but it's terrible, and it's hard. We get a lot of out-of-town guests that can take shuttles, which is great, but the ones that take cabs, they're really hard to rely on.
You had a chance, I think we had a chance, to just kind of see Lyft for a little while in action.
It was fantastic.
And I don't remember exactly when that was, recently?
Two summers ago.
Yeah, something like that. And so did you use it, and did your customers use it?
I used it about a dozen times, and I would use the app for my customers as well. It's great. They send a picture of the driver, the car, the license plate. You know exactly what you're getting into. You can tip right on the app. It's paid for right through your phone. It's a fantastic service, and I use it all the time.
Were you at all concerned about safety, people doing the driving, et cetera?
Not at all.
Never had an issue with
that? Nope, not at all.
Any single bad experiences for you or your customers with it?
Not at all. And I use Uber in other cities where I go, and I really, really hope it comes to Rochester.
Okay, so from what you're hearing, and again, Janine's with Avino, but more than just Avino, people in your industry, in the high-end restaurant industry, in the restaurant industry in general, hospitality, they want this.
Absolutely.
What are people saying to the city? Is there any sort of a lobbying effort going on?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
There should be. I don't know why they took Lyft away. I emailed Lyft and told them it was a great service and that we used it for a lot of our customers. It's safe. You know, our customers aren't getting in their cars after a couple glasses of wine. It's easy.
Okay. And lastly, before I let you go then, you've used it here. You used Lyft when it was here briefly.
Correct.
You've used Uber in other cities.
Correct.
Your customers used it briefly when Lyft was here.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it different than a regular taxi service?
It's all right on your phone, and you can actually track the car on your phone and see exactly where they are when they're getting to your house, when they're getting to the bar. It tells you down to the minute when they're going to arrive. And again, it's you know exactly whose car you're getting into and what they look like, and everything's on your phone.
All right, that's Janine Wassley, the owner of Avino Restaurant in Rochester. All of our guests are going to have a chance to respond to that. And if you're just joining us, New York State, the lawmakers, the legislature is going to consider whether to expand allowing Uber and Lyft and similar ride-hailing services like this statewide, right now only in New York City. We've heard not much from City Hall. I actually reached out to the mayor's office, and they directed me to City Council. And City Council, we haven't heard much from them, so I know there's been sort of a little bit of a back and forth. Let me just ask Jay Ramachandran, the CEO of Brighton Securities, who's used Uber on the road. Do your experiences relate to what you just heard from Janine Wassley?
Absolutely. My experiences here in town also relate exactly to what Ms. Wassley said. If you disagree with what Ms. Wassley said, I have a challenge for you. Go out at 12:30 at night on any given night and call 4 cab companies and see how many cabs show up. How many cabs show up within, you know, a reasonable amount of time? The answer is not that many. I used to, when I was in college here, keep the numbers of 5 or 6 cab companies on my phone precisely for that reason. An app like Uber and a service like Uber adds accountability. I actually would not be opposed to the taxi drivers offering a competing service with the same level of accountability. The problem isn't whether it's Lyft or the taxi service, it's the level of accountability, the level of service, and, you know, kind of that certainty that a car is coming to pick you up.
Absolutely.
All right, so Zubin, let me start with you then. Zubin's from the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. Why don't you respond to what you just heard from Jay and Janine Wassley? Go ahead.
Sure, yeah. I want to thank Jay and Janine for making those comments, because I think it kind of cuts to the point of where the discussion has been in upstate New York so far and the way that Uber's been leading it. Which is to say that the discussion so far has not separated the app that Uber is using from the business and legal model that they're pushing for. I 100% absolutely agree with Jay that the convenience of the app has to be expanding across the state and through the country. What our position is, that is, if you're getting a car through, whether you stick your hand out on the street, whether you call a dispatcher on a phone, or you get it through your app, there should be a level playing field. What should not happen, and the argument basically that Uber and Lyft have been making, is you can either have app-based hailing with a whole new economic model that throws out existing worker and consumer protections, or you can't have it at all. And frankly, that's just not true. That Uber has an option, which they have not been mentioning in their lobbying efforts throughout the state, where you can use the app to connect to existing licensed taxi services where the driver is paid at the rate of pay that the city has determined can be used to support a driver making a full-time living. So I think it's really important that we talk about, yeah, the app is great, and definitely there should be a push for that in the way that other cities have apps that actually, like Jay was saying, you don't need 5 or 6 numbers. The app will coordinate all companies in the area and enable you to get that car and pay the driver at the right rate. So I think it might be useful to talk about specifically this bill in the legislature that's being pursued right now, and what that would mean for Rochester and for the state.
Okay, let me also let Franny respond as well from the Rochester Taxi Drivers Association.
Yeah, definitely. We're not against the Uber drivers. Absolutely not, because a driver is a driver is a worker is a worker. You know, what we're against is the perception that the Uber model cannot be replicated. And, you know, that takes a little bit of a time to get that up and moving and get this all figured out, because this is new. This is a basically new way to do the job. So it's going to take a little time to get this up and moving.
So you're saying bad for workers in general, because Rochester taxi drivers could lose their jobs?
It could tend to, because what happens when they come in, we're not against the competition. You know, we love the competition. It's good. I think what we have to figure out is how, going forward, to incorporate the rules and regulations that take care of the industry as it is and the drivers as it is now, and how we incorporate this new Uber coming in and the new phenomenon of rideshare coming in.
Let me listen to you. Go ahead, Zubin. Yep.
And I just want to say, you know, in terms of when we're talking about driver pay and the ability for this to be a full-time job, I think we should talk a little more about what it means to allow the TNC model, right? You said we're talking about an expansion from New York City. So I want to be clear that in New York City, Uber is operating right now. It's the one place in North America where they have agreed to actually be held under the same regulations that other black car and limousine companies are using. So it's not people using private cars. Every driver has a taxi and limousine commission issued license. They have commercial insurance on the vehicle, and they have a higher level of inspection for that car. What the problem with bringing in saying you can use Uber, but not just connect with a taxi, but if you're using it's going to be called a TNC, Transportation Network Company vehicle, that you throw out all the old rules, and the city of Rochester, under this law, will not be allowed to make rules. They will be preempted from making rules for them. So those rules about the rates go out the window. So Rochester taxi driver right now makes $3 a mile, right? And we don't, you know, I drove a taxi in New York City. I did 30 trips a day. I was able to make money. In Rochester, I was talking to the guys, they do about 10 trips a day. So that rate is really important. That is your protection for a living wage. And when we look at $3 a mile, we're seeing in Detroit right now, it's 30 cents a mile. Right? Those are taxi rates we haven't seen in this country since World War II. In Pittsburgh, similar size city to Rochester, it's 120. I'm sorry, they just lowered it again. It's 90 cents a mile. So we look at this example of if a driver takes a trip from downtown to the airport right now in Rochester, they make $22 on the meter. You take out some money, you take out 54 cents a mile, the IRS says, for gas. You add a tip. Commercial insurance is a little higher. The driver goes home with about $20 for that trip. You do that trip 10 times a day. If you're lucky, you make some good money. With the Rochester rate or the Pittsburgh Uber rate, the fare itself is $9.80. Uber takes a quarter of that. You take out your gas expenses at 54 cents a mile. The driver's going home with about $3 for that one trip, right? And, you know, this is not New York City. You do that trip 10 times a day, you go home with $30 in your pocket. And it's hard for us to see in the labor movement how we have a statewide movement talking about $15 an hour as a right for every worker, and that we would be opening up a field to say there will be an unlimited number of cars competing for a limited number of fares, and we'll let these companies charge whatever they want. I find that to be a bit of an untenable position for anybody who's supporting the fight for 15.
All right, but Zubin, so here's what I want to do. I want to listen to what the CEO of Uber has said about that exactly. And again, I could just read Twitter comments the entire hour. You know, a gentleman on Twitter says, it's not fair for independent companies to bypass the laws and fees that regular taxis have to follow. But then a number of people, and I'm not trying to cherry pick, a number of people have either writing in saying they've had great experiences with Uber and Lyft or not very good experiences in regular taxis. Dina says Uber is amazing, used it for the first time in October in Portland and Seattle. It's great. I'd love to see it here. Sarah says the last time I taxied in Rochester and never again was spot to the Dryden for $10. The driver didn't know where the Eastman House is, and the driver's mood was uncomfortable, a far cry from the mints and meaningful conversation I've received from Uber drivers. I mean, I could go on and on, but let's let Travis Kalanick on Stephen Colbert respond to this. He was one of Colbert's first guests when Colbert moved to CBS, and this is Travis Kalanick on Colbert.
What is your response to Uber kills professional, good-paying jobs, and it's unfair to the drivers, and it's destroying the cab industry?
My response is, let's just take New York, for example. Taxi driver spends $40,000 a year renting a car. That should be a Bentley that you're riding around in. But instead, it goes to a taxi owner who owns the license to own and operate a cab. In the Uber world, you can use your own car. You don't pay $40,000 to rent a vehicle. You make more dollars per hour, and it's flexible. You don't have a shift. You can turn on your work when you want to, and you can turn it off. You want to pick up your kids from school, turn it off. If you want to go hang out with some friends, turn it off.
Okay, so that's Travis Kalanick responding to some of this. And Jay Ramachandran, you've been listening to some of the concerns on the taxi driver side. What do you think?
I think, quite frankly, the taxi drivers are getting hosed a little bit by the city of Rochester. Why do they need to pay for a taxi medallion when that is your biggest cost? Your big costs are upkeep on the car, gas, and the taxi license. The taxi license isn't really providing something for you. Case in point, Lyft came to town 2 years ago. Where's the app for the taxi drivers? The only person who's really able to create that is the taxi and limousine service here in town. They're the only one that has a relationship with all the taxi companies. Where's the competition? Lyft was created in, or Uber was created in 2012. That app was out 12 months later. It's been 2 years.
Okay.
Where is it?
Zubin, what do you say?
In terms of where is an app for Rochester?
Yeah, why do we need Uber and Lyft? Why haven't taxi companies sort of modernized and followed the same kind of model themselves?
So, I mean, obviously, they absolutely should. And we're seeing that progress throughout New York City, and we're seeing it in cities like San Francisco. And I believe there are companies in Rochester that you actually can hail a cab through an app right now. I think for the ease of the consumer, right, it would be better if we had a system where a municipality can create rulemaking that says, look, all the companies will be hooked up to the app, so you don't just have to pick one or the other. But I think, you know, what to go to the comments earlier, I think that idea somehow that somebody, you know, the ease of the app, again, that's an issue with the app itself. And, you know, Uber said time and again, they are not a transportation company. They don't want those responsibilities. They say we're a technology company. And if that's the case, then if they want to produce a technology and partner with and contract with the actual transportation companies, I don't think there's anything that would stop them from doing that, right? And if they want to have higher standards for, say, okay, you're a taxi driver, right, and you want to be able to get e-hail dispatch from us, and you will get paid at the proper rate, yeah, we'll have a different standard, and you have to meet that. But that's not what's being proposed here. What's been proposed is come bring your private car, work with us, and sure, you don't have to lease a taxi medallion, but we'll put 1,000 cars on the street where there's 200 cars right now handling all of the business, and you won't be able to get enough fares in the day to make a full-time living, and you're gonna take the rates that we give you. And I think it's really important to focus that this is their model, right? They came to Rochester saying job creation and saying 1,000 jobs. They said 1,000 jobs and $350,000 a month in net income, which means $350 per month per driver, right? There isn't an interest here in creating a new full-time job. It's taking the existing work that 250 drivers are doing and piecemealing it off to a bunch of part-timers. So that, I mean, I think when we focus on that as opposed to the technology, yeah, the companies should step up. I was a taxi driver. I work for a labor union. My interest is people making a living. What the companies need to do to compete, I totally agree with you, Jay. But whether they need to do this alongside the model that brings in poverty, sub-minimum wage, poverty pay, I don't think that needs to come along with that baggage.
Let me ask Franny then, because what I see here is, I think what happened with Uber and Lyft is they saw a need in the marketplace, and they filled it very innovatively and very successfully. As I sit here, I've got comments coming in from people complaining about taxi service, that just a long list of comments, whether it's about drivers or time or whatever it is. So clearly, Franny, the marketplace had a need. And my question is, can we get to a point where the needs of the marketplace are filled without injuring the workforce in some way? Because if that happens, then that solves this. But can we get there? Because right now, we're not there, right?
No. I in Rochester and Air, we're not there. Okay, but I do truly believe that it'll get figured out. It's going to take a while. It's going to take some drivers to realize that, you know, you got to step your game up. And there are really good companies in the city that have they stepped their game up. Okay, so.
Okay, Jay's got to depart at the half-hour mark, so let me just get some final thoughts from you, Jay. You know, going forward here, I know you care about the people involved here. Yeah. What do you think needs to happen to satisfy everyone?
I think that service, that Uber-like service, it's not about the pricing to me. The pricing, I think for most people that use Uber, notice none of the comments on your Twitter feed are about the pricing of
Uber. None of them, that's true.
The problem is do we want the rest of the people in the community, other than the 200 drivers and anyone else that works for the taxi companies, to suffer for the benefit of those 200 workers? Because, again, it's been 2 years since Lyft was here. There's no solution in sight, right? There's no solution for the convenience factor of Uber and Lyft in sight. And if you're talking about it taking time, someone could go start a company today and have the app ready for the taxi drivers before the city of Rochester and the taxi drivers adjusted to the new marketplace. The problem is the speed of change and innovation that kind of the bureaucracy is preventing. It's not the pricing. And I don't think any of the consumers around here that are commenting on here are going to say, we really want Uber and Lyft because it's going to be a cheaper taxi service. That's really not a concern for the consumer.
Okay, Franny?
Zubin,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Zubin.
I'm sorry. So, Jay, I absolutely agree with you on the convenience factor. I use an app in New York to get yellow and green taxis, and living in Queens, it's made that much easier for me. I mean, my response to that, if the price isn't a concern, I would want to ask Uber. They have a product that does that, and with its with that convenience and with the same layout and the arrival time and the rating system, gets people into licensed taxis in New York and San Francisco, and offers it at the price point that the municipalities regulate. And I would want to ask, why haven't they offered that in Rochester? I don't believe any of the rules or regulations would prohibit them from operating in that manner. But they haven't suggested that to you folks yet. And they're holding back with the idea saying that it has to be this other model. So I think that would be an interesting question to raise with them.
All right, when we come back from the short break here, we're going to hear from some of our listeners on the phone. And there's an aspect of this that I hadn't considered until it was raised by Clark Hograph from RIT about one of the possible consequences or maybe even a benefit of allowing Uber and Lyft. So we'll talk about that as well and get more of your feedback in various forms about the state of taxi service, Uber and Lyft, and what New York State ought to do next in deciding whether to allow it back in Rochester. Our thanks to Jay Ramachandran from Brighton Securities, the CEO of Brighton Securities, who's used Uber in many places, for stopping in. I know you got to run. Thanks for taking the time, Jay.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, short break, and the conversation continues next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections. In the wake of the lead crisis in Flint, Michigan, a lot of communities are asking, how big is the lead problem in their own hometowns? And Rochester has one. We'll talk about what we're doing to fight lead here. Then in our second hour, a partnership to help people in poverty, particularly women and children. We'll talk about that as well. It's all Thursday on Connections.
We'll look at the message out of New Hampshire's primaries and travel to Flint, Michigan, where citizens aren't sure whether they can believe what the government says about the water.
I don't know how you rebuild it, because trust is hard to rebuild after it's been broken. And that's in everything, so it's going to be hard.
Lead and distrust in Flint, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Clark Hograph is an associate professor of electrical engineering technology at RIT, who wants to add just maybe an additional wrinkle to this conversation about Uber, which is what, Clark?
Oh, it's interesting. You know, one of the challenges for the cab drivers is that Uber is providing this innovative model for business, and it's changing that, right? And there's sort of this uneasy transition that's going on. But Uber is also doing a lot of innovations in other areas. And one example is they're working on developing cars without drivers. So Uber made a very aggressive move. They hired away 40 researchers from Carnegie Mellon University's Robotics Institute just to focus on developing self-driving cars. And it's sort of an indication of how disruptive Uber is as an innovative company, right? So they're looking at different ways to provide the transportation service and really open that up. And as you said earlier, Evan, they've identified an unmet need, right? And the ability of you know, cab companies in each and states and even countries really to deal with that change in that business model has been interesting to watch, right? How regulation has changed, the protests in France over how Uber has come in and sort of undercut the market and changed the market, right? Going, say, for local, right? If you go for having more than 200 cabs available, but really addressing this accessibility issue. Well, Uber's doing that in a much more advanced time frame, right? Looking at how do we get to driverless vehicles. And I think that's going to be an interesting aspect of it. So you talk about, you know, where is this heading, right? You know, initially you'd say, well, cab drivers are going to lose their jobs. And then more broadly, say, like, how is this going to affect driving in total?
Well, Clark, to be clear, I've always thought we're not going to a future of self-driving cars unless that technology is so safe, so consistent, because the single first accident, you're going to see a lawsuit, even if, I understand, we're not very good human drivers, right? We get in accidents all the time. We're not very reliable either. And a self-driving car can't text and drive, thank goodness. But what about the safety aspect here?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I was having a conversation with Jay before the session, and we were talking about how that aspect of accidents, we're already dealing with that every day, right? So the average American pays $1,000 a year for insurance on a sedan. And really, where is that going? That's for handling the error rate of humans right now. We have accidents, people die, and that's essentially covered in our insurance. That's all sort of been worked out. Is the automotive company at fault for that? Is the driver at fault for that? In the end, that all has been sorted out and rolled up into an insurance system. And so you look and say, well, the same thing would apply to self-driving cars. When they have accidents, how are we going to handle that? It'll work itself out, and probably in a very similar way, will it be an insurance rate? But you could ask yourself, in general, do you believe that eventually technology will be better than human drivers? And my expectation is that will be the case. And I think there's sort of a middle ground. You don't have to have self-driving cars to achieve that. You can simply have crash-avoiding cars, which is really the area that I'm interested in. And I look at, say, Uber shooting for this very high-level dream of being able to have self-driving cars. On the way, they have to develop all these technologies that will prevent car accidents. And that's an interesting spillover benefit for all of us.
All right. Franny Subcheck from Workers United and the Rochester Taxi Drivers Association noticeably winced when Clark said self-driving cars. You want to address that, Franny? Go ahead.
I'm a labor person, and my main concern are people. Okay. I'm not against technology. Technology is something that we've got to get through. My question is, where do these people go that will be replaced?
And it's interesting that, you know, it's an interesting situation. We never think about the 30,000 people, our friends and our neighbors, who disappeared this year because of car accidents. We've come to this point where we accept that. We accept the fact that there were 1 million accidents in the U.S. with injuries. There were 6 million accidents in total, 1 million accidents with injuries. And so we've come to accept the fact that, we're going to get screws and bolts and so forth put in our ankles because we had a car accident, but it's okay, the insurance covered it. You know, we forget about the fact that, you know, our brother was killed by a car accident. You know, he was walking down the street when he was 17 years old, and he got hit by a car, and that's so normal. And the question is, why we accept that as so normal? And if we look at this technology and say, look, very straightforward technology, the technology you have in your cell phone, think about what you're carrying around. You're already paying for that technology in your cell phone that has this incredible processing power. It has two cameras. It has wireless communication. It has a GPS. It has accelerometers. It has all this technology. Everyone already has that. The only place that doesn't exist is in your car, preventing car accidents.
But Clark, it sounds to me at least like you're willing to accept then that the disruption that comes with this kind of technology could be job loss in certain industries, taxi driving for an example. Is that something we accept as a consequence?
If we look historically at new innovations, that's exactly what happened. And it's sort of an odd thing if you look and say, what happens when a new technology comes out? And how does a new technology have value? It's by the jobs that it displaces, right? So if you look at Microsoft and their products of office automation, right? How did they make money? They put people out of work. Oddly as that sounds, right? They put secretary staff out of work, and they enabled people to do things more quickly and efficiently. And I think the real struggle for communities and for society is, how do we manage those transitions effectively? So it used to be you'd have a steady career for a period of time, and now it's much shorter period of time. How do we plan for that? You know, if the half-life of a career is 10 years or 8 years before technology or other innovations cause us to have to change jobs. You know, I look at my experience in industry, right? Why did I change jobs? Well, because they closed down the factory that I was working at. They closed the engineering. They moved it to another. It was sold to another company, right? Those transitions came, and they were essentially out of my control. And the only thing really I can control is the adaptation to it. So I think we have to sort of accept to some degree that that is happening. And, you know, it's happening in spades with Uber because they're an extremely aggressive company. They've got an innovative approach. They are addressing this unmet need.
Well, Zubin, what do you think there? A future with this kind of technology could mean a lot of change, not the least of which could come to the taxi industry, and maybe Uber is going to be pushing that. Is that something that we accept?
Well, I mean, I think you know, Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, when he was asked about what he would say to his drivers, he said, look, this is the way of the world, and the world isn't always great. And I think we can do a little better than that. I mean, if, you know, definitely accident prevention technology being integrated into cars is something that we all look really forward to. I mean, the car on the road is our workplace, and as a workplace safety issue, I was far more scared when I was a taxi driver of getting into a collision on the highway than of getting robbed. But I think in the taxi industry in particular, right, there are certain things that aren't necessarily going to be replaceable, right? Helping that elderly person into the car, helping people with their baggage at the airport, at the train station. So I question the viability of the driverless car in the model that Uber is seeing for the taxi market. I know it's happening. I know it's out there. But I mean, mostly, I find it rather disingenuous, you know, that Uber comes upstate claiming to create jobs in an area that has been losing a lot of jobs, while the other side of the mouth, they're saying they want to get rid of what Travis Kalanick has called the most expensive part of his business was, quote, the dude in the car.
All right, let me get to some of your phone calls. Bud and Chilai, first up. Go ahead, Bud.
Topic. I want to give a little historical perspective. Years ago, when I worked at Kodak, used to have carpools. Those were Uber-like. We just gave the money whoever was driving, a few bucks for gas, and that was it. Now, in today's world, I see Uber having the greatest value for people who are out in the suburbs and for Uber drivers who are out in those same suburbs. And then I see the taxi having more advantage in the city limits where people have more diverse places they want to go. But what I'm saying is I believe, and I agree with your last talker, I think the taxi people have to become innovative and figure out can they partner with Uber in some way so that the areas that they serve the best would be covered by taxis, and the areas where taxis are less profitable would be served by Uber drivers.
But thanks for the phone call. So let me ask Franny then, could Rochester taxi drivers exist only in Rochester city limits?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. No, they take rides from the city out, you know, or they will come into the city. I don't think there's a big enough market to serve the city and outside. What rideshare usually does is concentrate in the city where the mass is. In Rochester on Fridays and Saturday nights on the East End, that's where the business is. So that's where our taxi drivers, that's basically their moneymaker. And I don't think it would be good enough for our drivers. It would take work away from them.
I'm seeing a number of comments online from people like Caleb, who just wrote the following question. And it's just simply about whether we can get the current taxi cab system to be as sort of likable as an embraced as Uber and Lyft have been. Caleb writes, for me, it's simple. I want to be reliably able to call up a car on an app and get from A to B safely and without cash in my pocket. Can Rochester taxis do that? Franny?
I think so. I really do think so. There's a couple companies now that are already doing app service. They know, these ladies and gentlemen know that technology is here and they've got to step up and they've got, you know, it's competition. And like I said, we're not against the competition. So I think they realize that the competition is here. And now you're going to have to do something about it.
Now, to be fair, Franny, some people listening would say, well, you are against the competition if you are against allowing Uber and Lyft to come here.
No.
The argument would be that if you embrace competition, they come in and you just simply, you outmaneuver them, you out-innovate them, you either do what they're doing and do it better, you improve the game, as you said, step up the game, but you don't block them from coming in. Yes or no?
Go ahead,
Zubin, go ahead.
You're the tech.
So yeah, I mean, I think I agree with Caleb entirely that the idea that you should be able to get a taxi through the app is a no-brainer, and that needs to progress. But in terms of fair competition, you know, I think we should look at what Uber is doing in some other markets and what that competition looks like. Because right now, like the guys in Rochester, they have their rates, they're set by the city. They're not allowed to charge above them, you know, which is good for consumers, and they're not allowed to charge below those rates because they're entitled to a certain standard to live in. Now, in other places, like, so take the example of Detroit, where the initial charge is 50 cents and then 30 cents a mile, which is roughly 10% of what Rochester drivers get paid. So if Uber comes into a market and starts like Rochester and starts charging those rates, how could any taxi driver be expected to compete with a cab charging World War II rates? And this is a pattern that we see throughout the country. You can go on Uber's website and check out their rates in different cities. And you see where there are established taxi markets in the bigger cities, the rates are like that. Southern California, there's no initial charge at all, 64 cents a mile, 90 cents a mile. Places like Idaho or Burlington, Vermont, Jackson, Mississippi, that don't typically have a large taxi base, the rates are like they are for taxis, $2.50 initial charge, $1.75 a mile. So that's the other thing, is you don't know what you're going to get. They can change the rates overnight. They can change what they pay the driver overnight. They can tack on an extra fee called a safe rides fee, which is supposedly for background checks and insurance costs. But those fees also vary from market to market.
But consumers haven't seemed to mind it, right, Zubin? Consumers are not.
With that, the way they really drop the floor on driver earnings, they come in with those prices. Who's going to pick the $3 a mile taxi when there's a 50 cent a mile taxi as an equal option?
Right, but our listeners who are emailing me and writing into the show are saying on free market grounds, so what? I mean, they're saying.
Okay, so I would say to that you know, there's a reason we have labor laws. We have a minimum wage because we've decided that's the basic minimum you need to earn as a standard of living. So, and when we look at the fares in Detroit and the fares in Riverside, California, that Uber charges, there's base charge, time and distance. Even if a driver had a passenger for an entire hour and was driving them around, after expenses, they still could not earn minimum wage. So, I think, yeah, of course there's a free market, but there are basic labor laws that need to be abided. And Uber, it's interesting to note that, you know, Uber has, although they claim their drivers are independent contractors, the Department of Labor in California, in Oregon, have found their drivers to be employees of those companies, which would mean a minimum standard of living at the minimum wage.
That's right. That's exactly right. And as we mentioned earlier in the hour, Lyft recently settled with their employees, paying out more than $12 million, but not giving, I should say, their employees, their contractors who want to be known as employees. So, yeah, I think some of these labor battles are going on. And I think before I jump back to the phones, and I'm coming back to the phones in just a second, Franny, I think that's at the core of this. Yeah. I think right now Uber and Lyft have not only found that gap in the marketplace to serve a need, but they are doing it in a way that allows them not to operate without, for now, in many places, you know, sort of paying benefits and finding a way to pay less. And the pure free marketers, those who say, okay, they say, so what? But the argument that you're giving us, I think, is we have to look at the consequences of that. Who is impacted?
And
what are you hearing from lawmakers on this in Rochester and at the state level?
Rochester area, they're basically, they know that there's going to be that hurt factor going into new technology and everything. State, they say basically that definitely this is all going to be leveled out both sides are going to have, we're going to have to somehow level everything out. So we don't know what that leveling of everything means, but hopefully workers aren't displaced. Hopefully our drivers won't lose their living.
All right, let me grab a couple of phone calls. Andrew in Henrietta has a question about the legislation about Uber and Lyft. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, hi, guys. I just wanted to mention that you guys have talked about, you know, driverless cars and how Uber wants to replace that. And, I mean, you know, technologically, we definitely made some innovations. But as far as legislatively goes, like, we are way beyond that. I mean, there's a lot of more hurdles, right, as far as I understand that. So we have to have state, local governments act, and even the federal government act on this. And I don't know if you guys, you know anything about that at all, but I just figured if you could talk a little bit more about
acting on Uber and Uber and Lyft in general, or about driverless cars.
Well, both. I think they kind of go hand in hand, right? Because they extend the driverless car aspects extend to way more jobs. If you think about it, I mean, we're talking, you know, truck drivers and, you know, all these other different things. So with respect to Uber and Lyft, but definitely kind of overall, is there any? Have you heard anything? You guys know anything about that?
Well, go ahead, Zubin. Yep, go ahead, Zubin.
Oh, I'm sorry?
I was going to say, go ahead, Zubin. Zubin's with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. Go ahead.
Oh, about any legislation specifically related to driverless cars?
Andrew?
Is the question whether there's been any legislation proposed or moved on driverless cars?
Andrew, why don't you clarify what you want him to tell you?
So, I think the driverless cars are a larger impact than one specific company, right? And this one company is making leaps and bounds. Is this something that you guys are monitoring or even know or care about, or is this something that's just so far in the future that you're not going to worry about it?
Well, the driverless car, I know, you know, Uber has been working with Carnegie Mellon University to develop that technology. I think Lyft has just partnered with GM. I think GM is investing, I believe, $500 million in towards developing that technology. But on the legislative front, I don't think anything has come up about, you know, trying to allow for the operation of those cars on the road yet. I know, you know, this is not exactly in the taxi sector, but that there has been some movement in Nevada towards trucking and automated trucking moving forward. But the current bill that's up in Albany right now doesn't address the idea of a driverless car yet. It's just this idea of, you know, would you have a driver in their private car go around and be able to pick up passengers for money without having to follow any of the existing laws for taxi service throughout the state or local governments.
All right, well, I've got to get to more phone calls here. Clark, I don't know anything more about laws. I mean, if tomorrow you or someone in the field had a driverless car, how soon do you think it could get on the road?
Well, it's interesting. Certain states are allowing driverless cars on the road now, and the National Highway Transportation Safety Agency is actually looking at the possibility of a request from Google to get a driver's to get their AI software, their artificially intelligent software, to be recognized as a driver. And that's important because the federal motor vehicle safety standards are written around having a driver, a person in a seat holding onto a steering wheel, pressing on a brake pedal, and Google's car doesn't have the steering wheel, brake pedal, etc. I think what's interesting, though, maybe to go back a little bit on how one way that the cab companies could approach this is to recognize that what Uber has really told them is that there's an amazing unmet need for them right now in terms of reliable expanded service, in terms of payment methods, and that one way of looking at this, right, Uber has identified that and they're implementing that. And if the local regional cab companies could say, how would we expand the number of drivers we have, the locations for cars, they might be able to sort of head off some of the benefits, right, that Uber is attaining. Right, they're not the only one who could do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think implementation of this technology in a responsible way could even lead to job growth, right? Where there is, if there are people who don't think of taking cabs right now, but if they have the option through the technology, and that leads to more full-time positions, that would be great.
And I think there's a macro trend to go with that, right? This macro trend of fewer and fewer 20-somethings are getting their driver's license. I think it's now around 75% are actually even going for their driver's license. So that market is actually growing, and Uber recognizes that, and I think there's an opportunity for everyone else to innovate right now to meet that new need and growing need.
Yeah, Benjamin on Twitter says, innovate or die. Isn't it that simple? Always has been. Michelle says, rural New York needs Uber and Lyft. So there's another vote there. Let me get Robert in Fairport, who feels like we're missing something here. Go ahead, Robert.
I think the thing you're missing here is that the opponents to Uber and Lyft keep talking about sort of dividing up a pie that's a fixed size. I think that those services could grow the market three or four-fold, because when you have actually been to a market where you have Uber and you get a chance to ride it, you understand that you don't need a car in those markets. So you theoretically, if you had Uber and Lyft in Rochester, you could have a lot of people that don't need cars anymore. And I just think that that's being missed here. You can see how these services could contribute to a carless existence. And I think that it's a shame they're not offered here yet. It just seems to be a triumph of bureaucracy over consumer choice.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Zubin. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think Robert was responding to what we were just saying, that, yeah, if the ease and availability of hailing leads to an expansion of the consumer base, that's great. That's really wonderful. It would mean more work for drivers who don't make too much. Again, just what I'm saying is, you know, we're looking at this in terms of the state bill that has been proposed, which allows an unlimited number of cars to get on the market. I'll give you an example. In San Francisco right now, which is, one of the cities best served by mass transit, there are only 2,000 taxis operating in that city. They passed the bill, which allows an unlimited number of private cars on the street, and on the weekends, Friday, Saturday night, you have people coming from an hour and a half, 2 hours away, San Jose, Oakland, flooding into the city, right? So in terms of, rather than having an efficient allocation of resources through technology, what you get is a flood of people coming in and jamming up the streets. And at those times, that's what I'm talking about when we talk about piecemealing the work out and that part-timeization, right? A taxi driver working in those nights still work 12 hours, and with that explosion of inefficient resources, those 30,000 cars, they're going home with $40 for themselves, and that's not tenable. So I think if there is an expansion through demand, it should be done in a way that says, okay, maybe the city needs to issue more hack plates, and all of those hack plates can coordinate with the technology, and that we preserve this as a full-time, as viable full-time employment. And if that can grow and people can use it, all the better.
On Twitter, Alex, in the same kind of a discussion about growing the number of people who use a ride service, says he thinks cabs have not been dependable enough in Rochester and too expensive, and he's confident — he did mention the money, they're too expensive — and Alex says he's confident DUI arrests would plummet if Uber and Lyft were allowed. And I wonder, Clark, if you think that is in line with some of what we've been talking about here.
Well, it's actually interesting. Uber, one of the ways that Uber markets their services to cities, to new cities, is that they've got statistical data that shows that DWI rates drop by 10%. When an Uber is in a city compared to other cities.
And that just means, again, Franny, that we've got to get more people taking cabs and regular taxis. And you're fighting a battle, I think, to convince the public that it is worth calling the taxi company, that it will be reliable, it will be clean, it will be solid, the service will be good. I mean, right now here, how are we going to change the public mindset that seems to be coming through in the feedback I'm getting, which is that they don't want to call a taxi. They'd call an Uber. They don't want to call a taxi. That's not everybody. But how do we make that better? What can happen?
Like I said before, I think the industry here in the city and county and the area, I think they realize that they've got to step forward. They've got to get the apps. They've got to bring themselves up. And it's going to take time.
Raise the quality?
Unfortunately. Oh, definitely. Quality, the service. And the city they do have trainings where the city does put on trainings for the drivers and everything. So it's going to have to... It'll work. It'll come. It'll come.
Clark, go ahead.
So let me loop this back to lives and sort of unseen losses of life. It's interesting. So if you look in New York City, 60% of all traffic fatalities involve pedestrians or bicyclists. And for New York State in total, 27% of all traffic fatalities involve a pedestrian or bicyclist. Going deeper in those numbers, right, who dies on the road, right? It's the pedestrian who's walking across who's drunk, right, at night. That person wasn't able to find a cab, right? Or they chose not to drive themselves. And there was sort of an interesting study in the, one of the Freakonomics books that looked at it and said, you know, you're safer driving home drunk than walking home drunk. You're more likely to die walking home because of this, you know, this factor. So again, it sort of stresses there's a lot of consequences that we deal with every day in terms of loss of life that we don't recognize that could be solved by providing people better transportation services.
Well,
I mean, I absolutely agree. I know that that Uber has been partnering with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and there have been those efforts to sort of increase that availability at those peak hours. It is a little curious to me, though, that, you know, with their that in some ways it seems like it might disincentivize riders from choosing that service. You know, this past New Year's Eve, which is, you know, basically one of the biggest drinking nights of the year, you know, they were charging rates that were 10 times more than their usual rates because they engage in surge pricing where there's high demand. So, you know, it's concerning to me that that could happen at those peak times. You know, in New York, we see drivers get emails saying, work for these peak hours and we'll guarantee you a certain income. And those are the times when the bars let out and the surge is often in effect in those times. So I think, you know, if that's the case, we want to make sure that the pricing is uniform across the board. A passenger doesn't have to worry that, you know, are they, especially when they might not be able to perceive what they're doing so well, if they've had a few drinks, that it's going to cost 3 times as much, 4 times as much, 10 times as much.
All right, because we're running out of time here. Sarah just says, I'm 27 years old, no car. I don't take taxis because I found the service to be poor. I am the person that the recent caller was talking about. I would start using these ride-sharing services if they came here. Rick just says, I wonder how many of the Uber and Lyft drivers are really looking for full-time work as opposed to simply making extra money. I think it's a fair point. I think that's part of what Franny and Zubin have been warning about here.
That's exactly right.
Okay, and so just because we're out of time, with every single phone line filled up here, we could have done another hour on this easy because of the public interest in this. So Zubin Soleimani from the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, this is not done by any means. I know New York State is still looking at this legislation, and I really appreciate not only your time, but I hope that you're willing to come back and update us when New York State decides in some form in this legislative session this year.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Zubin. And Franny Subcheck with Workers United and the Rochester Taxi Drivers Association, thank you so much for being
here.
Thank you.
We'll continue
the conversation. Yep. Clark Hograff from RIT, an associate professor of electrical engineering technology. Thank you as well, Clark.
It was a pleasure to be here.
All right, and if I didn't get your call, it was only because we were loaded this hour. Great feedback today. Our thanks to Mariel Brinkerhoff, man on the phones and doing the intern work for us. Val LaBanca is our engineer and Megan Mack producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.